ladies and gentlemen, one of the best boxers on planet Earth, and his trainer, Bo Mack and Terrence Crawford. Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming here.
Thank you, man.
We're live now.
Appreciate it, appreciate it.
Hey, man, I'm a big fan of yours. We've talked about you many times on this podcast. I'm a huge fan of the way you switch stances. You know, you switch stances as smooth as anybody ever. Like you got to go back to Marvin Hagler to find a champ that switched stances like as fluidly as you. It's pretty impressive stuff, man. Have you always been doing that?
A lot of practice. Yeah, since I was little, I remember getting in trouble because I used to always switch him. My coach used to always say, you need to worry about fighting the one style first and perfecting that before you try to switch and do a different style. But I always switch, so it got to the point where they was just like, all right, well, you going to fight like that, we're going to train like that.
Wow, so you forced it through.
Right.
Wow. Now, when you first started out, was there anybody that influenced you to switch like that, or was it just something you felt naturally?
It was just naturally.
Wow.
It was just like, all right, this not working, so I got to do something else.
Just make it more tricky.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's part of what's interesting about watching you fight. Watching you fight is that you could see you trying to figure out what's up. Like, first rounds when you fight is one of my favorite things to watch because I see you measuring dudes. I see things happening, and you're switching stances. And then when you start finding the timing, it's like timing is one of the more fascinating things to watch about boxing because a guy who has perfect timing and perfect – like, when you see a guy make a read and then execute and it's perfect, it's one of the most beautiful things in all of sports.
Right, right. It's like you – you know, you're watching their every move, and then you're just dissecting them slowly.
How do you think – do you think about it like when you start a round, a first round of a fight, is it different for every fighter, or do you always want to do that? Do you always want to, like, put them into the computer?
No, it's different. It's different. Like, sometimes I just want to go out there and just be like, all right, I'm going to see what this dude got, see if he can take it.
Just go right to him.
Yeah. And then sometimes I just be like, all right, I'm going to take my time and, you know, figure him out, see – how fast he is, see, you know, what things he like to do and what he don't like to do, or see if I move this way, his reaction, just certain things.
It's, you know, you came to the UFC this weekend, and, you know, obviously I love MMA, but one of the things that I love about boxing is when you take away all the elements, you take away wrestling and kicking and all that stuff, you get the highest level of exchanges and punches, and you get to see with guys like you or guys like Canelo or Floyd or the top-level boxers, you get to see what's possible with guys that are training with the best scientific methods and with all the knowledge of all the past fighters. I mean, when you were growing up, what was the fighter that influenced you the most?
Well, hands down, Floyd Mayweather and Roy.
This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're looking for something to do this summer, you might want to check out some of the upcoming fights. Even better if you can catch them up close in person. It's quite an experience. But if you want to get the best seats, you have to act fast. And that's true for a lot of things in life, especially when it comes to hiring for your business. You need to hire the most talented people you can before the competition scoops them up. And to do that, you need ZipRecruiter. And luckily, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. Got your eye on a rock star candidate? ZipRecruiter's invite to apply feature lets you cut the line. Once you review ZipRecruiter's list of the most qualified candidates for your job, you can easily invite your top choices to apply to encourage them to apply sooner. So, amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan to try it for free right now. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. You guys know how much it means to me to stay in shape physically, but your mental well-being is just as important. When we keep things bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Even if it seems like something small, like maybe you're stressed about work, maybe you feel a little lonely, it all starts to add up. And if you don't deal with it, well, these feelings will sit there and continue to fester. One way to work through whatever's weighing you down is talking. It helps more than you think. And if you need a safe place for that conversation, I recommend therapy. It's a great tool that you can use to figure out your feelings and learn positive coping skills. So if you want to give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's entirely online, convenient, and flexible. It's easy to get started, too. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/JRE today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/JRE.
Jones Jr. You know, I used to love watching Roy Jones Jr. I'm pretty sure everybody was a fan of Roy. But set aside Roy, I always watched it, Floyd Mayweather and Pernell Whitaker.
Yes.
I was too young for Sugar Ray Leonard and them, so.
I'm old enough for that. I was there for the Sugar Ray Leonard days. I was there for Sugar Ray Tommy Hearns, the Sugar Ray Duran. I was there for all that stuff.
But I watched everything. When I was young, my coach, Midge Miner, he used to always take me to his house and watch boxing tapes. That was to keep me off the streets and keep me out of trouble until I went to the gym.
Is he still around?
Nah, he passed.
Damn, he'd probably be like, look at that. Yeah. Boy, did that work out. You know, we talk about an investment in time. That worked out tremendously. Yeah, it's always in our culture, there's a special place for the highest level of boxers. There's like a special place of admiration. And I just feel like with guys like Lomachenko, with guys like you, with Canelo and Triple G, this is a great time for boxing. It's fun to watch, man. There's so many Errol Spence Jr. There's so many elite boxers right now. It's like a really exciting time.
For sure, for sure.
Do you recognize your place in history? Do you recognize that like you're a special dude?
Of course, of course. Like I always tell people when they mention me and Errol Spence, you know, of course I want the fight. I tell everybody that. I always say, with or without him, I'm going to the Hall of Fame. When you look at all the things that I've accomplished in the sport of boxing, people that's in the Hall of Fame didn't even accomplish that. You know, so I just tell people I don't need him. He really need me.
Well, we need it. Boxing, right? Don't you agree?
Yeah, boxing do need that fight.
Boxing needs it. I mean, it's one of the beautiful things about when a Canelo and a Triple G do get together, as you see these guys in their respective weight classes that are in their prime. It's fun, you know? Like, that's what everybody wants to see. That's the fight,
it's all
right?
About. That's what it's all about.
You just stop a whole lot of barbershop conversations.
Yes. You need to stop a whole lot of comedy club conversations, barbershop, garage, everywhere. Yeah, that's the fight to make in your weight class right now, right?
For sure.
What's the hold up?
You got to ask them.
Oh, it's them. Well, everybody has to hold out a little bit, right, to get the best deal.
Yeah, that's
right?
Cool. That's cool. You know, it's all about business. But at the same time, my side of the deal is ready whenever.
And you can see all the interviews out there, man. You can see where if it's Terrence or myself or Bob or anybody that's affiliated with Team Crawford, we all say we want to fight, you know.
Yeah.
We could have a fight tomorrow, you know, if we wanted to. So, but we know realistically it won't happen. But
so when would you think that he's waiting for the right time marketing-wise, or do you think he's ready for the right time where his skills, he feels like, are able to challenge you? Like, what do you think is the actual holdup?
I think it has something to do with Top Rank and PBC.
Oh, okay. So it's a promoter issue. Right. So it's a financial scramble.
I won't say financial because the money will be there if the fight was ever made. I just think it's, you know,
egos.
Yeah.
I think egos. I think it'd be probably some egos.
So do you think hopefully this is just something that's going to take a little while, but it will eventually come to play?
Of course. I think it'll happen, you know, but I think, you know, me being with Top Rank is standing in the way of a lot of things happening.
That makes sense. That makes sense. It's like, it's interesting that promoters of boxing promoters work together well at all.
Right.
You know, like you think about it, like if the UFC had to work with Bellator and put together some world championship fight, basically there's so many times you got champion versus champion. They have two different promoters and they have to decide to get together and make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Who want to get most of the pot? That's probably what it is.
Yes.
Or what network is going to be on. Yeah. If it's going to be on Fox or ESPN and who's going to promote it and
It's also like when someone like Floyd Mayweather has done what he's done and sold the kind of pay-per-views that he's sold and then, you know, and achieved this sort of level of financial fame as well as like people. He's famous not just for being the best boxer, but famous for being insanely rich. Like that's part of the fame.
Because he promoted.
Yes, because he promoted, because he figured it out. And a lot of other people are going to probably try to do the same thing as well.
Right. That's just not my style.
Too busy, right?
Too busy.
Yeah, man. I mean, you got to just stay busy being Terrence Crawford. You want to be promoting. That seems like a lot of a pain in the ass, man.
I'll do all that. I'll do all the promoting. I'll run my mouth and shit.
What about after you're done? When your career's over, when you retire, do you think you do some promoting then or training? What would you do?
No, I'll just be in my gym back at home. Me and my coach got us a gym and just put my time and effort into the kids in the gym and my five kids that I have.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's a solid plan, you know? You don't need to get involved in that promoting shit.
Now, he do get in the gym sometimes and work with the fighters.
Do you?
Yeah.
Why is that funny?
Because it's funny to see him work with him because after about two rounds, he's like, I can't do this shit, man.
Because they're not listening?
No, man, it's like you telling them over and over to do one little simple thing and like, just say you tell them keep your right hand up,
right,
and they keep going like this. You're like,
are you talking about brand new people?
Like, yeah, like even boxers that's been boxing for years that they really don't have the fundamentals down to a T. And you're like, dude, you've been boxing too long for you to still be making the same mistake.
Mm.
And it's like, I only could say certain things for so long. And then it's just like, all right, I ain't saying it no more.
Well, yeah, your opinion is as valuable as anybody alive. You're one of the best fucking boxers ever. If you're a beginning boxer and Terrence Crawford's teaching you something, you're not listening.
You're probably nervous as shit.
Probably, for sure. For sure. But that's crazy that you'd be working with beginners. That must be wild for them.
I work with all of them.
That's awesome. That's got to freak them out, though.
Yeah. Especially the ones that's professional. And they be in the gym, and I be yelling at them. They be on the mix with BoMac. I'll come over there and critique them, and they be like, shit, here come Bud. They looking at me like, am I doing it right? Am I doing it right? You know, so I just want everybody to win. I'll just keep them sharp.
Well, when someone has achieved that level, the level that you have, you know, like anybody around you that gets a chance to watch you train and be a part of that, that's gigantic to see something like that in the gym. Wouldn't you agree, just to see like a elite world champion?
I mean, for just having him around, you know, in the gym when he's not even supposed to be training or just being around, and then the other fighters around is phenomenal because you'll see this little extra push in the guys.
Sure.
Or like he'll come and run with them and I could see the smaller guys want to try to get ahead of him, you know. So, but it's cool, man. It's cool. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's – do you think about that, how much you're inspiring guys?
Of course, all the time. That's why I come to the gym when BoMac be like, man, just take a rest. Just relax. I come to the gym and work out when, you know, I don't have nothing coming up just so I can show them, like, even though I'm – the champion of the world, I still work extra hard to make sure I stay champion because it's harder to keep the championship title than getting there.
It's one of the more beautiful things about boxing is there's no shortcuts.
None.
For the best ever, you have to train. Right. You have to train hard as fuck. You just got to do it when you don't want to do it. There's no doubt about it. You got to do everything you're supposed to do. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, and if you don't, it'll fuck with your head.
And that's one thing I took from Floyd Mayweather. You will always see him working out.
I don't
care if he was at a bar. You'll see him running from the bar. He got his little workout clothes and his little TMT van, and he just run home. Or you'll see him 3 o'clock in the morning. Man, let's go work out. You know, and that's what I admire the most of is his work ethic.
His work ethic's off the chart. This is the only way you'd be that good. There's no other way. I mean, yeah, he understands boxing at a level that, I mean, he grew up with it, having his dad and his uncle and all that. The family was so many great boxers around him all the time. But you don't get that good without insane work ethic. There's no shortcuts.
No, not at all. I have never seen nobody, like, put as much work in as Floyd. So that's why, you know, for me, I'm, like, thinking to myself – I got to work twice as harder, you know, if I want to get above him, because I never want to be like anybody. I always want to be myself, but I want to surpass the people that was in front of me.
Was it eye-opening when you got to watch him train?
Of course. Of course. You know, when I was younger, it lets me know that I wasn't working as hard.
Yeah.
So now when fighters come to my camp, or I bring in some sparring partners or some friends that's professional that just want to, you know, come to camp and just experience just being in camp with a world champion, they all say the same thing. Man, I thought I was working hard till I came up here, man. You work too hard. And it ain't for some people, because some people, they just be like, oh, I can't do it today. Like, nah, I'm going to let y'all do them too. I'm going to go to the gym, but I ain't going to do the other stuff. And I just be like, well, man, come on, man. They're like, man, my body. I'm like, man, see, that's what's going to determine winning and losing. You complaining about your body when you can rest later, you know.
Right. But what other stuff are you trying to get them to do? I know you do a lot of stair running, right?
I do a lot of everything. I do yoga. I do strength
do really?
Condition. I do swimming.
Hot yoga, too.
You do hot yoga? I love that.
Hey, Joe, I used to do it, too, dog.
I believe you. Listen, hey, man, everybody can do it.
It's just a mixture of, you know, just all-around body working out.
What do you find that you get out of yoga?
Man, yoga is harder than you think. You know, you in there, you got to control your breathing, you know, just holding your hands in certain positions is tiring. So them little muscles that you really not using, you know, in a day-to-day activities, you using in yoga, and it's just burning. And you just like, man, just holding your hands up like this and going like this. You be like, you be in there shaking like, man, it's kind of burning. And you see the girls and you like trying to do it. And it helps you with your balance as well.
Yeah, it helps you with a bunch of things. It's just interesting that more fighters don't adopt it. You know, I think anything that makes your body more flexible and increases your range of motion and then gives you strength and all the, it feels like when I do yoga, like all the connecting stuff, like the shoulders and hips and knees, all that gets like this extra stability workout that you don't really get from a lot of other things. I feel like it connects everything together good.
And it helps you prevent injuries.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
You know, so
now, speaking of that, like, what do you do in terms of recovery? Do you do ice baths or sauna and massage? Like, what kind of shit?
Massaging. I don't like the cold, so I
don't like the cold.
I normally take Epsom salt baths. And
yeah,
just get massages.
That's a grown up in Nebraska thing, though, right?
No. What's that?
Cold.
Yeah,
it's cold in Nebraska, but I'm used to that cold. But I just can't fix myself to get in an ice tub. I never was that type.
It's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. I'd be like,
you pick your poison.
Yeah, I stick my feet in there and be like, I ain't getting in there.
Yeah, it's rough.
They'd be like, come on, it's gonna help you. All right, it's gonna help me next time. Cause I fuck that.
Have you ever fucked with cryotherapy? You ever tried
that?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I
did that one time.
That's
one time.
Easier.
Yeah, it was cool. Cause
it's only 3 minutes.
It's
yeah,
dry.
It's dry, and it's only 3 minutes.
Yeah. So, but that ice bath. Nah.
Yeah,
I do the cryo. The ice bath, nah, you want? I'll be sore.
I don't know what the science says. What's better? I've heard both things. I've heard that the ice bath's better because it's prolonged, because it's like 15 minutes, and I've heard that cryo is better because you hit your body with such a high degree of cold that it freaks out and produces these cold shock proteins better. But either one, you do those. You do massage, you do yoga. What kind of I know you do strength and conditioning stuff. I watch your Instagram. You got a great Instagram.
Right.
And your kids are wrestlers, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you think your kids will ever fight MMA?
No, actually, I'm trying to convert them to baseball.
Really?
Probably in the next year. You know, because it ain't that much money in wrestling.
It's true.
You know, when you look at the MMA fighters, they ain't making a lot of money to get beat up like they getting beat up. Like, look at Pettis. He broke his feet, right?
You know, it looked like he broke one of his ankles, maybe,
yeah,
or at least hurt it.
I'm pretty sure he didn't make over $300,000 for that shot, that fight.
I'd like to know. See if they find out how much Anthony Pettis made for
break
that fight.
His foot.
He broke his foot for sure.
Yes.
Oh yeah, he was walking around or being pushed around in a wheelchair today on Instagram. Yeah, it's rough.
And you see people get kneed, kicked in the face, teeth.
Do you look at it as being more brutal than boxing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You like, take more risk in UFC.
You think
boxing,
so?
More head injuries,
mm-hmm.
but UFC, more risk for
For sure, for injuries, right?
Right.
Broken bones right. and ankles and knees and shit. Yeah.
And I just think it ain't worth all that. Boxing ain't worth a lot of things, too, because you seeing people die in the ring. And
mm-hmm.
It ain't worth your life at the end of the day.
When you decide to hang it up, how will you know when?
You never – well, me personally, I won't think I'll ever know when, but I just got a date and an age, like, all right, you know, middle 30s.
How old are you now?
I'll be 32 next month.
So you're close.
Close.
So you have it in your head. Just yeah. go out on top. Like Marvin Hagler was one of the only ones to ever do it. He went out on top. Another switch hitter.
Right.
Marvin Hagler was the only one out of all the greats who lost that fight, controversial loss to Sugar Ray Leonard. He's like, fuck this. I'm done. Just
didn't
walked
he come
away.
Back one
nope.
fight after that?
Nope. Never. Oh, never dang. Came back.
So his last fight was Ray Leonard, wasn't it?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That was it. Controversial loss to Leonard, became a movie star in Italy. You ever seen his movies in Italy?
No, I just
want to watch some clips. It's hilarious. You can pull up Marvin Hagler fucking people up. He's like a movie star. He does like these that's crazy Italian movies. What is this?
This is how much he made for
155,000. Wow.
Another 155 if he won. But
so Diaz see? Made a flat 250 for the win. Yeah, they used to before the Reebok deal. They used to make. Much more
way
than that.
More for sponsorships.
Yeah,
because I got a buddy Mursad Bektik, you know.
Yeah, I know that guy. He's really good, very talented.
Nebraska.
Oh, is he? Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
He's from Bosnia, but he mm-hmm. lives in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Oh, okay.
You know, real good friends, real good friends, and
talented kid.
Yeah, and they just always say, "All right, well, we get paid for this if we win, this for showing up, this if we get best knockout of the day."
Whatever. This is Marvin Hagler as an action hero, and this is like not far after the fight with Indio 2, because there was a lot of shit that was unresolved after Indio 1. He was.
I've never seen that before.
Yeah. Oh, these are the spaghetti westerns, like, but for you know whatever year this. Look at Marvin Hagler shooting everybody. This is
so
hilarious.
So can he speak the language?
Yeah. Apparently he speaks Italian. And, you know, he's a star over there.
Wow.
Yeah. Look at him. He's
Marvin.
Body shot.
But he just decided, like, I don't want to box anymore. I'm done.
That's good for him, though.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
you don't got to get punched in the head no more.
He speaks perfect. When you hear him speak today, they do, you know.
Have you met him?
Doesn't never. I'd love to. Yeah, I'd like to meet that guy. He was my hero when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I remember there was a video of him. He was training for Mustafa Hamsho, and he's running down Cape Cod in the winter with a hoodie on, just screaming, "War! War!" He's all the cold coming out of his mouth, the steam, and he's running. I was like, oh, my God. Because I was, you know, doing martial arts back then, and I was watching him going like, that's the ultimate champion. That's a champion that puts himself in a terrible place, puts himself down on the Cape in the wintertime to do all his training in the cold, mm-hmm. and runs in the cold, and it does it. He runs in combat boots, too. He ran in combat boots. And he would just be – he was hard as fuck, and he just had crazy work ethic. And I remember whenever I would think about being lazy, I would think of him running down the beach going, "War!" Just shadow punching in the beach. Roar!
It's crazy that you say that, because I remember when we was little, we used to always run in the cold. I mean, it'd be so cold where the snot is freezing up.
Yeah.
You tearing up. But as you get older, you'd be like, man, I ain't about to run in that cold. I run on the treadmill.
Well, you already know you know how to fight. You already know how to persevere. You already know you're a champion. You already know you're at the top of the game. You don't have to prove that to yourself anymore. You know how tough you are.
No. It'd be times that I'd just be like, all right, we need that hardcore work. Let's go.
Everybody
be like, what? We ain't going to Y? No,
man,
we going to.
One time, we ran right after Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, no. Right after?
Right after Thanksgiving dinner. Everybody's stuffed. And I don't get out there. I just get in the truck. Like, yeah, let's go. Come on. Everybody like, what?
Hey, so he made Thanksgiving dinner. and we in training camp. So, you know, we all got to lose weight and stuff. And Poe made all this food. Man, we all grubbing and stuff. And then so I'm eating. After I get done eating, I'm like, man, I'm stuffed. I'm like, man, I can't wake up this heavy. I was like, man, everybody, let's get it ready to go and run. And everybody looking at me laying down like, man, it's cold. You for real? So we running with these little flashlight, like the little, you know.
Oh, man, like hiker lights.
Yeah, where you go fishing and stuff. Yeah. So we all running, everybody honking. Doo, doo, doo.
Wow.
It's at night. It was pretty chill.
Wow. Yeah, but that kind of shit, like what Floyd Mayweather does, that 2 o'clock in the morning workout routine. Every now, like, it's good to just throw monkey wrenches into your sense of what you should be doing and when. Be ready to do it always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's why their cold weather running is big. Cold weather running is those people that live in cold climates that run in the winter, man. That's a hardy breed of human. That's not a regular person that decides. Like, nobody's got a gun to your head. It's right. Not your job. You decide to put your fucking running shoes on and lace up and go out there when it's zero.
It's kind of like when before I fought Amir Khan, and I was down there shadow boxing in the snow in that blizzard.
I put it on
my Instagram. Everybody was like, "Oh, he's training for Spence." Like, I'm we fighting got like
Khan. 10 inches that day. 10 inches that day. Man. It was blizzard, and we actually got knocked off a couple of days from leaving for training camp.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it was so much fucking snow, dude.
But there's something about that. Like, even you talking about it, you know, it's kind of wild. You're out there boxing in the snow, shadow boxing in the middle of a blizzard. Something wild about that.
But it's crazy, though, because when it's snowing, it's not that cold.
Right. So, it's true, isn't it? Yeah. It like insulates a little bit in some weird way.
I was just sitting in the house, and it was just like, man, go outside and do something. So I went outside, ran a little bit, and then I come home, and I was like, come here. He's like, what? Like, come and record me. Shadow boxing and stuff after I ran. So it was cool.
So when I see you doing those stair runs, you do that quite a bit, right?
Right. Every Sunday.
Where do you do that at?
In a Colorado Springs.
Well, don't probably want to tell anybody where you go.
Oh, they know.
They know?
Oh, it's
they
go in there Colorado anyway? Springs.
Oh, okay. That's a famous spot, right?
Yeah, Manitou Springs.
How many steps is that whole thing? Something crazy, right?
It's a mile and a half up, I believe.
No, it's a mile.
A mile up a hill. How long does it take you to get up there?
Probably like 35 minutes, 34.
That's a fucking horrible run.
Yeah.
A mile and a half.
You're not running.
Up a hill.
But some people run it.
Oh, you walk it?
Yeah, that's insane. Them people that be running, insane. Because the air getting thinner and thinner as you go, and then the steps. You got some steps that's like this, that's small, and then you got some steps where you got to really reach.
Oh.
Like, you know.
So if you're running, you slip.
Yeah.
That's a fucked up tumble.
Yes, for real. Hey, for real.
Yeah.
Like, when you up at the top, you feel like you in the clouds sometimes. Like, looking down, like the cars is, it's a straight shot.
Would you do your training camp up there in Colorado Springs?
Right.
Just for the altitude?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually got a house up there.
Oh, really? Yeah. You just go back and do back it for each camp? What made you decide to do your camps out there?
Just to get away from home, you know, clear my head, get away from all the negativity. And I've been doing it since 2013.
So do you have a gym set up at the house? Oh, that's nice.
Everything.
I saw like Canelo had something like that down in San Diego. There was a thing when he was training for one of his fights. They just rented a house, turned the garage into a boxing ring.
Mm-hmm.
So you do that kind of thing? You have it all set up out there?
Yeah.
A lot of guys do that at Big Bear too, right?
Yeah. It's similar to that.
Yeah, having that high altitude, is that what you prefer? Like for your wind?
Yeah, that helped my wind, but at the same time, everything is already set up. Like everything from the yoga to the swimming to the gym to everything. It's like a second home to me.
Mm.
So it's not like I got to go looking to find where I'm going to do this. It's like everything is everything. And, you know, my family come up there and visit me, and we get the job done.
It's all locked in.
Right.
Now, when you go up there, who sets your schedule as far as what your daily routine is?
I do.
You said everything, yoga, everything?
Well, it's two more coaches that helps me, Saul Diegas and Red Spike. So we all get together. We make a calendar like a month in advance. And
Now, when you do things like when you add in yoga and swimming, how do you know when to put those in?
Well, everything was always – it started off with a trial and error back in 2013.
Grab that microphone. Pull it up close to it. There you go.
Like I said,
it's – move it around. It moves all over the place. All
right. Like I said, it started with a trial and error. 2013, you know, we tried this and we tried that, and we started doing this and we started doing that. And then, you know, just look at the fighter and just see if it's working for him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's working for him, you want to stick with it. And then you start adding little small things into it, like the yoga and the swimming, the running, the, you know, the incline.
Mm.
And so after so many amount of years, I think we've been since 13, I mean, it just worked like clockwork now.
Now, you know? Are you monitoring your heart rate, or how do you know, like, do you do any of that stuff while you're training?
No.
Nothing? Just go by feel?
Yeah.
There's two schools of thought, right? The schools of thought is, like, the old way is the best way. Like, just do hard shit, chop wood,
yeah.
You know, run, do the standard stuff. And then there's other people that watch their macros and, you know, you're smiling. You're not watching
no,
any macros.
I know what you're talking about, but we don't do none of that.
Yeah, I think we train more or less like the old school way, mm-hmm. but we do got, like, some of the new stuff in, like the strength and conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
We got the strength and conditioning guy, Jamie Belt. He's excellent. And he kind of adds a little stuff, new modern age stuff into the workouts.
Like sometimes I'll be wanting to do more, and he'd be like, no, that was enough for you. Like you might not think you did enough, but trust me, you'll feel it tomorrow.
Hey, but
you wake up tomorrow, you like, God damn, like I'm really is sore.
Mm.
But there's sometimes like I'll add in some stuff and just, I'll just, you know, try to make things different. He look at me saying, no, but we're not doing that.
Because you already be like dead, and he'd be like trying to add extra stuff, or he'd be like, one more round. All right, come on, one more round. And then you'll do that one more round, and they'd be like, all right, we got one more round, y'all. And you'd be like, man, I just pushed everything out of that last round because you said that was the last round. Well, come on, baby. Come on. I'm not about to argue with you so you can be great. So it's like, all
right. With a fighter, it's like there's got to be a balancing point, right? Like you don't want him to do too much.
Right.
So like when that guy told you, like, that's enough for today, yeah. And you like want to keep going, that's the natural inclination, is to work harder.
Yeah.
It's that weird balancing point where you got to figure out when you're overtraining.
Right.
And so if you're not monitoring your heart rate or anything like that, you just basically, if you have a flat day, you feel flat, you mm-hmm. just chill out.
Yeah.
So just like all
sometimes,
by feel.
Sometimes, Bo always asks me before we go work out, how you feeling? I'm like, I'm good, Bo, I'm good. Or sometimes I'll be like, man, I'm tired. Like, he'd be like, all right, well, we just going to coast today. Like if it's sparring day, he'd be like, all right, well, don't be trying to do too much. We just going to spar. Hit the miss, get out. We ain't going to do no bag. We ain't going to do nothing extra. And then after I do the bag and sparring, I mean, not the bag, but the miss and spar, I might be feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, man, let's do it. He'd be like, no, you said you weren't feeling good at first. Listen, come on. Let's go.
That's the hardest part, right?
Yeah.
To pull it, to know when to pull it back?
Right. Because he knows me. He's been with me since the beginning. So he knows just by looking at me, you know, what type of day I'm having. Like either in the gym or outside the gym.
That's got to be important, isn't it? Like knowing him from the time when he was younger and just starting out to today.
It definitely is, man. It plays a big part in the relationship as far as, like, say, inside the ring and outside the ring. Because, you know, as a trainer, you'll never want your fighter to overtrain. Or you'll never want him to undertrain. So, but I'll never have to worry about him undertraining because he's always in the gym. But I do have to worry about him overtraining. You know, because he always in the gym, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like you said, some days it'd be like, man, we're going to pull back this week. Why, man? Man, you've been training already for 8 weeks, you know? So, and we still got one or two more weeks to go before we hit the down date, the actual peak point. You know, all right, we'll pull back, you know? And then sometimes you get hard-headed and say, no, come on, man, let me do a little bit more. All right, do a little bit more, but don't do too much, you know? You ain't got to put your all into it. You know, just move around a little bit. You know, you got to do basically all fighters like that, especially fighters, good fighters, because most good fighters like Terrence and other fighters, Jamel Henry, Steve Nelson, you gotta pull them guys back. You always got to pull them back because they always want to go. because I always got this winning. I gotta fucking win. I understand that. I want you to fucking win too, but I want you to break your body down. I don't want you to leave your boxing inside the gym. You gotta have something left when you go to the fight.
That's a lesson that's very hard for young guys to learn, right?
Oh yeah.
But it's so critical to know where your body is, and at this stage of your career, I would imagine you just kind of feel it. Right. You know exactly. And when you're in training camp and you're gearing up for a fight, is that how it feels? Like, you know where you're at? Like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. I feel this right here.
Oh, yeah.
This is normal.
It's funny, though, because every fight, every single fight before the fight, you know, BOMAC always waiting to hear me be like, oh, man, I'm ready. I'm ready. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes it'd be a week before the fight. Sometimes it'd be 2 weeks before the fight. But when he hear it, that's what I've been waiting on. It's like now I'm comfortable, because like sometimes he just be like, he'll look at me, I'll be working and stuff, and then he don't say nothing. But then when I come to him, like, yeah, I'm ready, he be like,
he said he's ready.
Yeah,
you get that from the fighter.
Right.
Fuck that shit, man. I'll beat this motherfucker's ass.
Well, because you guys know each other so well and you work together so long, like, you must, like, say, okay, here we are. We're where we're supposed to be.
Right,
like,
right.
You've been there. Falls right into place.
Right. My biggest thing that I always told Bo, ever since I was an amateur, because I remember losing a couple of fights because I didn't train as hard and I got tired, you know, and I couldn't really do too much. And I always told Bo, I said, Bo, if I'm in the best of my best shape that I possibly can be in, nobody beat me. Nobody. And then Bo, I was like, I know. That's why you need to quit bullshitting.
This episode is brought to you by Hostage Tape. First of all, what a great name. This is a product that I use, and I started using long before it was an ad. Your sleep game is about to get a whole lot better, kids, because I want to introduce you to Hostage Tape. Put simply, it is tape for your mouth. But you're probably wondering why you should even need that. Well, if you're a mouth breather, if you snore a lot, or if you suffer from sleep apnea, this could make a big difference. This mouth tape can reduce or eliminate snoring and apnea, and at the same time, it'll help filter the air going to your lungs, increase your oxygen uptake, and improve circulation, which will make you feel more energized. It has tons of other benefits too, like it helps with bad breath, dry mouth, and of course, better sleep. For you and your partner, don't let bad sleep hold you hostage. Shut your fucking mouth with Hostage Tape. Buy it today and get a special buy two, get one free offer. That's a 90-day supply. Just visit HostageTape.com/Rogan. That's HostageTape.com/Rogan.
So it just got to the
point. That's a real friend.
Right.
That's a real trainer and a real friend.
Yeah, so it just got to the point where I just started, like, training real, real hard. And I was just, like, training not to
get... How old were you when this happened?
I was a teenager. I just started training not to get tired. If I can go in there and fight and not get tired, I'm going to win. That's what I always said.
So the switch flipped.
Yeah.
You figured it out.
Because I was losing to people that I shouldn't have lost to. Just head down, just swinging all wild, but they was in shape. And I was trying to be all cute and slick and get tired. Now it's a matter of life and death, me holding, they pushing me, I'm falling all over the place as a little kid, you know. And I was just like, I never get that tired ever again in a fight.
That is such an important lesson for young fighters to hear. Such an important lesson that there's no shortcut. When you look at a guy like Terrence Crawford, you say, well, that guy must be insanely talented. I mean, his timing, his reads on people, the ability to switch stances. He said, well, no. Well, how'd that come about? That talent came about through relentless hard work.
Right.
That's what makes that talent emerge. I'm sure you have an amazing inclination for boxing. Every elite of the elite fighter does. But you don't get to be there without any hard work. It doesn't exist. There's no way. It's so important for young fighters to hear.
And that's what a lot of guys that don't see is that hard work in the gym.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, hard work at home. When you look at any top fighter and you look at all the sacrifices they make just to be where they at, and you have people taking shots at them and stuff, and they'd be like, man, you don't know what I didn't put my body through to be here today, or you didn't know what I went through. And it's just like, total disrespect for somebody that haven't even stepped foot in the ring to be trying to critique you when they ain't even stepped foot to get punched in the face before.
They can never really understand, though, right? No one could ever really understand what it takes to be an elite boxer when your whole – the future of your family, the future of yourself, your financial success, and all the people around you is dependent on you navigating the most shark-filled waters in professional sports. A bunch of trained killers with their hands. Mm-hmm. Everybody's real good at knocking other people out with their hands, and you're successfully navigating those waters. Like, no one really understands that other than you.
Right.
You and all the other people, people on the outside that are close to you kind of get it a little bit. You are the only one who's ever going to be able to understand that. So all these people are talking shit. Like, they might as well be speaking a language they don't even know what the meaning is.
Facts.
It's nonsense. They're saying nonsense.
And it's just like you got a bullseye on your head and your back.
Mm-hmm.
Because you reverse. First, you had your eye on somebody, and you was like, man, I got to beat this dude. After this dude, I got to beat this dude. So you was eyeing that person that was in your shoes, you know, that was once champion of the world. Like, I was eyeing Ricky Burns when I was coming up, you know. And after I beat him, now everybody's eyeing me because I'm champ now. So it's no more Ricky Burns. It's Terrence Crawford. We got to get Terrence Crawford. He's the champ.
Mm.
So now it's like, damn, everybody wants your head. So now you got to train even harder to keep the title.
Mm. Do you ever have guys show up at your gym, talk shit, like Shannon Briggs style?
Nah, we ain't
nobody coming to Omaha, man.
Let's go, champ. Shannon Briggs were. If you were his weight class, he would show up in Omaha.
No.
Let's go, champ.
Shannon Briggs. Shannon Briggs
He's
would
hilarious.
Leave. He would leave Omaha the same way he came in. He and the man got beat up by somebody.
You ever see what he did to Vladimir Klitschko?
When they cut each other in that?
No, when they were – there's a couple times. One at a restaurant, poured water on his head. But
and he
two,
cut it. He cut himself. Him?
Oh, that's
himself.
Right from the broken glass,
yeah, he
right?
Cut himself.
But the other time was on he was on a paddleboard, and Shannon came by in a boat, knocked him off the fucking paddle, and the waves fell.
That's how I think that was staged. All
Do
that
you think
stuff.
It was staged?
I think it was. Staged.
Seems like it was staged.
Because, like, man, how you know where this man at every single time he
that's
goes?
A good
somewhere?
Point. That's a good point.
And then you just so happen to have some good cameras getting the footage.
It's true.
They want some good cameras.
But Shannon wisely would travel with good cameras and then just start making these scenes.
He never fought him.
Yeah, he did never fight him.
I think he fought him when he was younger or something, knocked him out or something like that.
Vitaly. Mm-hmm. Vitaly knocked him out. Right. Yeah. He fought the older brother, Vitaly.
Yeah, he was a monster.
Yeah. That's who he fought, right? I believe he
Vitaly.
Fought Vitaly.
Vitaly.
That's how you say it?
Vitaly.
Vitaly. Yeah. That's how you say Vitaly. That guy had an iron jaw. The brother, nobody could knock out the brother. It was crazy. That guy would just take bombs. Remember when he fought Lennox Lewis?
Yeah, Vitaly.
Yeah. Took bombs. I mean, that guy was so goddamn durable.
He would have won that fight if he wouldn't have got that cut.
Giant cut. Yeah. He was winning. What a weird style, too, right?
Right.
He had one of the most awkward, like, so strange watching him throw punches, but it was effective.
He reminded me of Drago off of Rocky.
A little bit, yeah. That guy's a doc. Like, he's got a PhD. I think he speaks like five languages.
Mm-hmm.
What did they call him? Dr. Iron Fist? Wasn't that his name?
Yep.
What a character. It's interesting, too. Like, the heavyweight division has now become the focal point of boxing again. It's very exciting.
That's
like
good.
For a long time, Vladimir Klitschko was the heavyweight champion of the world, and for whatever reason, nobody gave a fuck. It was weird.
Because he was dominating for all those years.
He was jab and clutch.
I think it's because we didn't have the American champion.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
So everybody was like, "Ah, forget it."
That probably had something to do with it. But if he was fighting, if he was fighting the way Deontay Wilder does, who cares if he's from the moon?
Right.
You know, starching people like that. Yeah. Like, we want to see that guy fight. Like, you don't care if that guy's from fucking Brazil or wherever he's from.
When he lay in that right hand, it's good night.
God damn. It's one of those punches where people just go, you see people in the audience go, God, he hits hard.
Even when he don't fully extend, it'd be like.
The boom. Crazy thing is when he fought Tyson Fury, he was 209. 209. That's nothing. And he punches so fucking hard. It's crazy. That dude is an anomaly. The fact that he won a bronze medal in the Olympics 3 years after taking up boxing.
Right.
It's insane. It's just insane.
Yeah. Because a lot of people, they asked me, because we was in the same, you know, trials in 2007. And it was like, do you ever remember Deontay Wilder in the amateurs? I said, man, he came out of nowhere cracking people. I said, man, he never went on none of the duels or nothing. He just came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
he's beat all the top guys in the heavyweight division.
Crazy. He's a unicorn, you know? When you look at his record, what is it like? 39 knockouts out of 41 fights? Is it something like that?
40 knockouts.
40 knockouts out of 41 fights?
It's 40, yeah. Okay. 39.
Yeah, it's only two fights. The first one, was it Brazil? No, Brazil he just knocked out. Who went the distance? Stiverne went the distance in their first fight.
Stiverne.
And then he flatlined him in the second fight, that crazy one. So he hits dudes. They go flying, man. People go flying.
He got the right last name. Because get wild in the mug. And once he get wild, he start.
How about that interview? Boom.
To this day!
The dude interviewed him was like, shit, what did I do? What the fuck did I do? And then he uses hashtag till this day. He uses that all the time on his Instagram. So that guy gets shell-shocked. He gets PTSD every time he reads hashtag till this day. He's like, no!
Hey, it's funny, though, because we all be saying that now. We be like... To this day, I ain't going back to that store. To this day. So everybody just...
Yeah, he took that phrase over.
Yeah.
That was a phrase, you know, that he just owned. He took it over. That's his now.
Oh, that's his.
That's his.
100%. To this day, that's his.
One interview. To this day. One interview. One interview before a fight when he's getting geared up.
But you see the look.
Oh, my God. He's terrifying. It's fucking terrifying when you know how hard that guy hits and he's mad at you. You're like, shit!
This motherfucker about to knock me out.
Even if you know for sure 100% he would never do that. It's like you're in the room with a lion. Like, oh no.
And he's aggressive.
Please, Mr. Lion. Oh, are you sure this thing's trained?
Yeah.
You sure it's not going to eat me? He's there. dude, that must have been terrifying.
I'd have been like, please blink.
He is fully geared up and ready for war before this fight. That is hilarious. That is hilarious. So this whole division now, if you look at the heavyweight division between, you know, Andy Ruiz just beats Anthony Joshua, and then they're going to try to figure out – they were going to try to do that in Saudi Arabia, but apparently Andy's like, I want to fight in America.
He should have took it.
In Saudi Arabia?
A big money fight.
I'm sure. Well, they're still going to do it. They're just arguing over where it takes place. So Saudi Arabia,
is it off the table now?
I don't know. Who knows, man? I mean, you guys know better than me. It's a lot of gamesmanship, right? Like we were talking about before, ego and stuff. Same kind of deal, I'm sure, as the Errol Spence Jr. fight. Same kind of deal. They're jockeying to see who could get the – Andy's worried about him taking some
– Yeah.
He's worried about taking some Mexican supplements while he's over in another country that they won't test him.
So he should have VADA or some testing that is going to go over there and, you know, test the fight.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why people are going to love a dude like Andy Ruiz as a champion. Like, he looks like a regular folk.
Right.
You know, he's got a lot of extra body fat. He's a bad motherfucker, but, he, you know, Anthony Joshua looks like he was made in a lab. He's got a perfect physique,
man,
you know?
It's crazy how big that dude got.
He's huge.
Because, man, he wasn't that big at first. But now he's slimming down.
Mm.
But I think he put on a lot of weight to, you know, carry with Vladimir.
Mm-hmm. Is that his name? Klitschko.
Klitschko. Yeah.
Is that when he put all the weight on?
Yeah, I think so.
What kind of testing they do for that fight?
They test you for everything.
But do they test you for everything at the weigh-ins?
Nah. See me, I'm with the VADA.
You're in the full testing pool. So they show up at 6 o'clock in the morning, the whole deal.
Yeah, and they can test out. They can test me right now if they wanted to.
So they might be waiting outside right now.
It's cool because I'm good. So,
but when he fought Vladimir and he got all big, would they do any kind of water testing?
I don't know what type of contract or what they signed for on their contract, on their fight contract, but I know me. When I'm in training camp, they come whenever. They'll come 6 o'clock in the morning and turn around and come to 6 o'clock at night if they want to.
That's a point of diminishing returns when you get too much muscle, right? Like, it can make you stronger,
right.
But that's going to need a lot of oxygen, too. And if your body's not used to it, if this is over the course of, like, a year or two, all of a sudden you got this extra muscle, like, are you a fan of guys lifting a lot of weights and looking
no,
that big?
No, lightweight, yeah. Lightweight, just to stay strong.
Yeah. Well, I have Evander Holyfield. We're scheduling Evander Holyfield. I'm excited. I'm a huge Evander Holyfield fan. But he was one of the rare guys that put on the mass and moved up from cruiserweight to heavyweight and fucking still never got tired. I mean, Evander never got tired.
Because he put the work in.
Crazy work ethic. And he was a guy that got thick and muscular, but it didn't slow him down. It enhanced him, mm-hmm. You know? Especially when you get into, like, the Tyson fights. Like, that muscle didn't hold impact at all. And he was fucking jacked. I mean, yeah. he was in comparison to cruiserweight Evander Holyfield, you look at heavyweight Evander Holyfield, like the Riddick Bowe fights. God.
Yeah, he did swell up a lot.
Fuck, he was jacked.
He was cut, though.
He was cut up. Chiseled. Yeah.
That's what Joshua should do. Cut down a little bit, mm-hmm. Chisel up, and get mobile.
And this was something that he got mad at Lennox Lewis for saying, that he needs to change camps. Do you think that makes sense?
Maybe just he should sit down with his team and figure out where they went wrong at. I don't think he should change everything.
The word was that he had gotten knocked out in training.
Mm-hmm.
That was you heard that as well?
By Joey.
Well, if Terrence Crawford heard it. Shit's got to be real. That's what I'm saying. I'm putting it on Twitter now.
I won't say if it was real or fake. I'm just saying I heard
it. You heard it, yeah.
But, you know.
Most people heard that.
Rumors go around and everybody hear it and it's not even true.
But that could happen, right? Like Richard Gere with that gerbil up his ass. Remember that one? Do you remember that rumor?
I heard that.
Everybody heard that. You never heard that?
He said a gerbil up his ass.
You heard it, right?
Yeah.
Tell him the rumor.
I just heard the rumor. I don't know
why. When we were kids. There was a rumor that Richard Gere had to go to the hospital to get a gerbil taken out of his ass. Now, I grew up on the East Coast. My friend Eddie grew up in California. He heard the same story. I was like, this is the same goddamn rumor. Like, how did this rumor get across the country with the same age?
Right.
No internet. The rumor made it all the way across the country when we were in high school.
So was it true or not?
Probably not. I think you get a gerbil out yourself. You don't need to go to a hospital. You know, that is not worth the embarrassment. You'll take some time and go to the store and buy some tweezers.
All right.
But you don't need to go to the hospital. Just get a mirror and some tweezers. We can handle this. We don't need to let everybody know our business.
All right.
The other one was Rod Stewart. Rod Stewart, there was a rumor when we were in high school. It was pre-high school that Rod Stewart had swallowed a bunch of jizz and had to go to the hospital and get his stomach pumped. It was probably some guy who Rod Stewart fucked his girlfriend.
Yeah,
and
he started Rod spreading Stewart, his rumor. The band guy?
Yeah.
Now, that probably is true.
I don't think so, because I think, look, when I hosted Fear Factor, we made people drink cum. They had to drink donkey cum. You could drink it. You could drink a lot of it, and you're fine. I don't think you have to go to the hospital.
I'd have been like, it's over with.
My experience on Fear Factor taught me that I don't believe that Rod Stewart ever had that real problem.
Hey, so did you ever do any of those attempts?
I ate some shit. They wouldn't let me try any of the stunts because of insurance purposes. Or, you know, they had a clause. The insurance doesn't let the host just try it out for fun. Like, I wanted to drive some of the cars off buildings and shit, but they wouldn't let me. We had one where they hit a ramp off the top of a building. They hit a ramp, and the ramp flipped the car through the air, and they flew, and they landed on these cardboard boxes. They stacked these cardboard boxes up like several stories high, and that's how they would get these cars to land softly. So the car would boom, hit the cardboard boxes and just slowly sink down. And then they would use a crane, flip the car over, and then they could use that car again. It didn't even get damaged.
Wow.
So these people would fly this fucking car off. It looked like the craziest amusement park ride ever.
And you wanted to do it.
Oh, fuck yeah, I wanted to do it, man. And I'm like, come on, let me do that one. It looks easy. I'm like, I'll do it for the promo. Like, come on.
I'd be cool with jumping out the plane.
Yeah, we didn't do any of that. But we did have people bungee cord jump off of a fucking helicopter. That was crazy. Yeah. We had people with a cord that was attached to a helicopter. And then they were hooked up to a tree. And they had to unlock themselves from the tree. They had a ring of keys. They had to find the right key in a certain mm-hmm. amount of time. And then when they did it, they unlocked and twang, they went flying through the air because they were attached to a bungee cord. And the bungee cord was underneath a helicopter. And it would go fucking launching them out into the middle of this crazy canyon. I was like, oh my God, someone's going to die. Someone's going to die. This isn't worth it. This job's not worth it. There was a couple times where I thought someone was going to die.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Stupid. Ridiculous. I'm glad we got through it with nobody getting hurt. It was like,
Who all came up with the the stunts and all that?
There was a bunch of people. They had a whole team. There's teams of people that came up with the eating stunts. There were the B team stunt guys, and then the A team stunt guys was the first stunt, and then there was the C, which was like the big championship finale thing. It's a ridiculous show.
That's time.
Man, I used to watch that show all the time. Yeah. Man. All the time.
I can't even believe it's real. I watch it to this day. I was like, is that really me? What is that? So long ago.
I remember I used to watch Jackass.
Jackass is amazing. Those guys are alive. Steve-O's so healthy. He's fine.
You're talking about making a fourth movie.
Oh no.
Yeah. Hey,
they're rolling that dice. They're rolling that dice. Someone's going to die.
Damn.
That's crazy.
I only seen glimpses of that.
Johnny Knoxville was a movie star for a while, right? Is he still doing big movies?
Yeah, I think so.
He was doing big movies, and then he was still willing to let a bull hit him. He put a blindfold on, stood in front of a bull, and the bull just fucking launched him through the air. Blindfolded.
That's just dumb as shit.
That's the dumbest
thing.
That's
why they call it Jackass. It's
it's like, do a whole those guys got fucked up, man. I mean, that is they're taking some beatings. Some,
just
like,
so we
real
can laugh
beating.
At them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
See, what you do is control who gets fucked up.
Right.
That's what I like about boxing. When I watch Boxing Express at the highest level, it's like one guy's controlling who gets fucked up, you know?
Yeah. Whether the other guy likes it or not.
Whether the other guy likes it or not. Yeah. Who was that, the Mexican gentleman that you fought recently that was talking a lot of shit and you stopped him?
Benavidez.
That's right. Yeah. That seemed like a particularly satisfying one for you.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of shit talking. Leading
he
up to that
a
fight
lot of shit.
For years.
There's certain times we watch guys talk shit and I go, son, slow down. This is not a good idea.
But it just came out of nowhere. Like, I never said nothing to that dude, never did nothing to that dude. Like, and he just out the blue, just for years, like, I'm ducking him. I'm like, dude, you went up in weight. I'm at 140. Like, when I was at 135, he was talking about fighting me. He was at 140. I got up to 140. He won a little fight, and then he moved up in weight. And I'm like, dude, like, you're nobody for me to be worried about. So then it got to the point where he was like, oh, well, they made me an offer to fight you, and you ducked me. And this. So he started telling everybody I ducked them. I've been ducking them since 140. So in a press conference, I said, did y'all ever offer me or him a fight to fight each other? And it was like, no. So where did he come up with that at? It's like, well, it don't matter. We fighting right now, so it's all right.
It was a good fight. It was a good fight, too, to showcase you, you know, particularly the knockout. And that was a beautiful combination, man, when you clipped him.
Right.
And then he gets up, and then you put him away. When you watch a fight like that where you have a guy who talks shit and then you wind up fucking him up, is it ever more satisfying?
Oh, yeah.
Because you seem to enjoy it. Like,
yeah,
the best fighters enjoy putting a beating on someone.
Of course. Like, going into the fight, I had to calm my emotions down.
Because of the anger?
Right. Mm. Because I really wanted to hurt that dude. Mm. You know, so going into the fight, I got to keep reminding myself, stay calm, relax, don't go in there and do nothing stupid because this is what he wants you to do. And you've been here before. You know, this is nothing new. You didn't have people talk crazy to you, but not to the level that he did, but you didn't have people talk crazy to you. So that's why when I first got in there, I was being patient, taking my time, and just filling him out, you know, because he's long. He's tall. He's long. He got some speed on him, but he's a naturally counterpuncher. So it was like I wasn't going to go in there and be careless and get countered because I already knew what he wanted to do.
So when you see a guy like that and you're fighting him, what is the strat? Like, is this a different strategy than a normal fighter because of the length and the counterpunching ability? So you have to adjust.
Right.
So what was your plan going in there?
Well, see, me, I got long arms to be in the division and my height. So I was just like, all right, just pick him apart, you know. And then once you go into your combinations, make sure you throw more than once because you're going to counter that first one probably.
And when you watch the fight, you feel like that's exactly what you're preparing for?
Right.
Now, when you see Errol Spence, excuse me, we see Errol Spence Jr., does he represent to you like one of the best of the up-and-coming guys that are possibly on your radar at least?
I really can't say that, you know, because Errol, this is the first real big test that he's up against.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
his last fight was with
Mikey Garcia.
That was a good fight. I mean, yeah, that was a
Mikey's
good test.
A smaller guy.
It's true.
You know, Mikey came from what, 126.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's what, 5'6"?
When you see the two of them at the weigh-ins, you really could see the difference.
Right.
And the size of Errol. I mean, Errol's ripped.
Right.
You know.
So that's why I say you really can't tell with Mikey Garcia. But don't get me wrong, Mikey's a hell of a fighter. You know, but that was his first fight in the division. He's a smaller guy. He's short. His arms are shorter. Errol taller, longer, bigger, you know, so faster. So I really couldn't see what I was trying to see out of Mikey Garcia.
Mikey went up just because it was a big fight, right?
Right.
Is he going to stay there, do you think? Or is he
yes, I believe he's going to fight Danny Garcia.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Well, there's so many different outlets for boxing now, you know? You know, there's PBC, there's Fox, there's, you know, ESPN is putting on high-caliber fights now, too.
Right.
It's very interesting. But HBO's out of the game. Doesn't that feel weird?
It does, Ben. That was the go-to channel to watch boxing when I was coming up. Only people you had on Showtime was Mike Tyson.
And it was the best commentary crew, too. It was Jim Lampley, Max Kellerman, Roy Jones Jr., or sometimes George Foreman,
mm-hmm.
you know, Larry Merchant
when he was doing it.
Yeah, man, Emmanuel Stewart. And Harold Letterman would come in between rounds and give you his score. It was fucking great. I missed that.
Yeah.
Don't you miss that? I mean, Harold Letterman, rest in peace. He passed away recently. Didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
But I missed that, man. Jim Lampley was fucking great. And Max Kellerman was great. It's like you don't have that. There's not a commentary team like that right now in boxing. Is there? Am I wrong?
No, not to the level of.
Why don't they have
expertise?
Those guys go over to one of these streaming services like DAZN or ESPN or something? It just seems like that's the team, right?
Yeah, but
Andre Ward. Andre Ward's fantastic at it. He's coming on here too.
Yeah,
Andre Ward. I'm excited to have him on.
Tim Bradley coming along pretty good too.
Yes, yeah. Very good. Yeah, I mean
he's taking that role of Teddy Atlas.
Yeah,
yes. It's like he got all that energy.
Yes. Well, Teddy's fucking what a character that guy is. You know, character.
Hey,
story.
Teddy,
he's amazing.
He get it is.
We're firemen.
Yeah.
We run to the fire.
Teddy,
he's like, oh my
role.
God, I'd rather get out there and fight. He's screaming, I'm getting fucking scared.
It's funny how he'll say on air, these judges need to be fired.
Yeah, he doesn't give a
what
fuck.
What the fight are they looking at?
He doesn't give a fuck. He gets furious at bad decisions. And he's right. He's right sometimes, you know? He
was wrong about that Jeff Horn fight.
The Jeff Horn Pacquiao fight?
Yeah.
Is that the one he freaked out? Is that one of the ones he freaked out?
Yeah, that's when he freaked out. When I first watched it, you know, listening to the commentary, I was like, man, Pacquiao whooping him. You know what I mean? Why they cheat him? You know?
Because
I wanted to fight Pacquiao because I was the next in line
of course.
To fight the champion. So, of course, I'm rooting for Pacquiao to win because that's a bigger fight. But after watching the fight again, I was like, they not saying nothing about all them shots Jeff Horn was hitting Pacquiao with. And he was just brutally bullying them, roughing them up. They could say, oh, he was being dirty. Sometimes he had a headbutt, but it's a fight. That's going to happen. You know, but he was real life manhandling Pacquiao, like pushing them all around. And you see, Keith Thurman couldn't even do that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's,
seeing him beat Keith Thurman at 40 years old, like, God damn, this guy's great. I mean, just look at his career. With eight different weight classes, world titles
eight.
In? Eight.
Mm-hmm.
Eight different weight classes. 40 years old, beats Keith Thurman, who's in his prime.
Right.
Crazy. I mean, what a man. I mean, what a world champion.
Well, he sure turned back the hands of time on that one.
Yeah, fucking crazy.
Didn't he?
And he fought in spurts. Both of them fought in spurts. And I thought Keith was going to pick up on it, but Pacquiao was only fighting the end of the round. Like, Keith would come on strong at the beginning of the round, and it would be like, all right, Keith winning this round. And then Pacquiao would just be like, pop, 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 pop. And then Keith would be like, like, oh, man.
I didn't even see the fight.
Well, when he dropped him with that right hook early in the first, you're like, oh,
it's like a right jab.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom,
like,
boom.
No, it was like he jumped in with the left and then followed by like a straight right.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It's like, wow. He went over the shoulder. Yep.
That's his punch.
Yep.
They were showing him hitting other fighters with it, the same mm-hmm. thing. Well, boom, boom.
He has such a unique style. The leaping in, what firing
shots. What would you have did if he came in with that shit on you?
Check, boom, boom, boom. Oh, man. Nah, but I'd take my hat off to Pacquiao. Like,
do you think it's possible that you could get a crack at him now? Because now he's in the hunt right now. Right?
I wouldn't say so because I was in the mentions and talked to fight Pacquiao since 2014, and we was in the same promotional company, and they couldn't make it happen.
Do you think it's because he's not interested in it?
I don't think he was interested in it because his coach mentioned numerous of times he didn't want him to fight me, and he wanted him to stay away from me. So I don't think they was interested.
Yeah, well, I could see that at this stage of his career. But, you know, Keith Thurman is a fucking murderous puncher.
Right.
Which was one of the reasons why it's more impressive that he beat him. And so who are they talking about Pacquiao matching up with next?
He chasing the Mayweather fight.
Of course.
So
why not? Right. Floyd, come on. I know you love money. He was saying that he thinks Floyd's out of money already because he says Floyd spends so much money, he's probably already out of it.
Well, he's spending money too. I think Pacquiao's spending more money than Floyd on everybody else.
Oh, that's right, because he's got like 50 people that he just like has supported. Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting guy, man, because he's so friendly.
Right.
You know, like, Pat, even like when people are trash talking, he's like smiling, and then he gets in that ring.
He'll kick your ass later.
Different fucking dude. Right. Once he steps through that roast, like, this is a whole different set of rules he's flying with.
Like, Keith Thurman talking about you're going to crucify him and stuff like that. And he just
don't say that. Yeah.
Okay. And got crucified.
Yeah, but he's super religious. I wish you the best, too.
Good luck in that fight.
Good luck in the fight. He's a killer pool player. Did you know that about Pacquiao?
No, I didn't.
Like, world class. Like, he could play pool professionally.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah,
you could play? Oh, we got to play then.
Yeah, I heard you got your little personal sticks.
I'm pretty good. Yeah. You good?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you play?
Whatever you want to play.
You play like 9-ball, 10-ball?
Whatever.
Okay, we'll play. Cool.
You can. Hey, so if I leave 5 balls on the table, you owe me.
If you five of your balls on five table. Balls on the table. My ball. What are we playing? 8-ball?
We can play 8-ball.
That's nonsense. That's a nonsense game. 8-ball, that's a silly game. You're trying to get me leave my balls on the table? Why would I do that?
No, I'm saying. Right. If
like
I
you
win.
Take your balls.
If I win.
Okay.
And you still got 5 balls on your table. Five of your balls.
If you.
You got 7 balls if you're playing 8-ball.
So the only way that I win. Explain what you're saying.
Okay, so you got 7 balls. To start, if I beat you and you still got 5 of your balls on the table,
okay,
then you owe.
Oh, what?
Whatever.
So if you mean if you break and run out and I don't get a shot?
No, that's 7 ball then. That's,
if you get all the balls?
Yeah, that's 7 ball.
And if I have 5 balls left and you win?
Yeah.
What is that? What kind of weird game is that?
You ain't getting
it. I'm not getting it.
So if I win and you still got 5 balls on the table.
Okay, then what happens?
You owe.
I owe what? But whatever. if we play 9-ball or 10-ball, you can't win if there's 5 balls.
No. 9-ball and 10-ball, that's different.
But that's what we were saying.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're saying like play 8-ball.
But I don't like playing that because that's tricky.
Yeah, it's tricky. You gotta play.
That's a strategy.
You gotta learn how to play.
That's a strategy.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta learn how to get out.
Yeah. I'll hit all of them and miss the last one.
We can play 8-ball though. That's so cool. I like 8-ball. It's okay, but it's a simpler game.
And you pop me for the last.
Yeah. Leave you hanging.
Yeah.
You fuck up. Leave that 10-ball wobbling in the hole.
Yeah. Like you done did all this for nothing.
I've done that before. It's very heartbreaking. It's the worst way to lose a game.
I swear, it's like all that for nothing. And the guy, thank you for cleaning it up. Now let me win.
That's a game that no one wants to lose to a girl. Like, it's hilarious watching dudes play pool against women. When women are good, they panic. They start getting nervous. Like, there's something about losing to a girl. It's almost like getting your ass kicked by a girl.
Some of them cold. I done seen some girls at the pool hall.
Oh, yeah.
Taking a lot of money.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's like, elite women players.
You know what I do to eliminate that?
What?
I just be like, nah, I'm going to let y'all play. Especially when you watching them and then they try to, hey, I got next. I'm be like, yeah, y'all can play. Because it ain't for me to be getting washed up by no female.
Well, and any professional. I've played a lot of professionals, like, because it's one of the weird sports. And you can enter into a tournament, and you could be a guy who, you know, has a full-time job, mm-hmm. and you might wind up matching up with, like, Efren Reyes, who's, like, the greatest player of all time. You might meet him in the first round of a tournament. You right. both – all you have to do is pay your fee. And then you pay your entry fee. You join in just like everybody else, and you're playing like a world champ, like the Terrence Crawford of pool.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa. And you could just be some regular dude playing Efren Reyes.
But it's cool. You can be like, man, I lost to one yeah. of the greatest.
Lost to one of the greatest of all time. Yeah, I've played a bunch of like great players. I played Mike Siegel before. I got to play a bunch of like great players, get my ass kicked by them.
Right.
You a professional pool player?
No, I'm quite a bit like below. Like if you had like Manny Pacquiao, he could play professional, he would beat me. I'm like one notch below that.
I'm probably like a notch below that, two notch below that.
But Manny like plays in tournaments. He gambles. They call him, well, unfortunately, they call him the cow because they're always milking him. Because he's real high level pool players, man. I mean, Manny's too busy with running the country. I mean, he's a fucking senator. On top of that, he's one of the best boxers in the world. And on top of that, he's got a family. He doesn't have time to be at the pool hall 10 hours right. a day. All those psychopaths that are like world champions, they play pool 8-10 hours a day.
Yeah.
They play all day long. All day long. You go there, you'll find them. That's where they're at.
He said, you go there, you'll find them.
They're there every fucking day. Everybody that I know that's like elite world class pool player, like Mika Immonen and, you know, these kind of guys, you go there, they're at the goddamn pool hall yeah. every day. No money in that shit, though. You think there's no money in UFC? There's no money in that shit.
There's a lot of money in poker.
There is.
I gotta learn how to play.
I know, right? Poker, it seemed like my friend Anthony Giordano, he directs those, used to direct those poker shows. He said what changed it is when you had the TV shows, well, you could see the person's hand.
Mm-hmm.
So like we were all playing. The folks at home could see what I have, and they could see what you have, but we didn't know what we have. So they're all in on it. So they're like, how's he going to play that? How's he going to play right. that? So it made it way more interesting than just watching. Because if you were watching three guys play poker, you would have no idea whose hands are what. Yeah. But when you're at home and you watch it on TV, you get to see the hand.
And so, I still don't know how to play.
Yeah, I don't know how to play either.
But I just be seeing people with their poker face all in. Don't have nothing. And then this dude with a good hand, he just be like, throw his hand and dude up. Just be like,
poker face. Risk.
Right.
Take that risk.
I'm like, oh, man.
There's something cool about that, right? Like a bullshitty. It's bullshitting, you know? There's something about that, like the hustle. There's the thing about poker that doesn't exist in anything else, a psychological hustle.
That's why they call it the poker face.
Yep. Yeah. That's a Lady Gaga song, bro. Pop, pop, pop,
or somebody face. That's just looking all like, looking all sad, like,
yeah,
I got a bad hand. Knowing you got a good hand.
Yep. It's tricky.
Then they, hey, you, all in.
Okay. Plus, I think those gamblers, when they're around each other all the time, and they just fucking, that's all they do is gamble and read signs and check each other out. They probably have like a highly tuned sense of someone bullshitting.
Right.
Highly tuned. Like, oh, there's something going on behind his eyes.
But that's why they wear them glasses.
Yeah. You know what I've always like loved watching, but I'm scared to get good at is chess. Just seems like it would eat your fucking time.
See me? Yes.
Do you play?
Yeah. I taught him how to play.
He taught me and I beat him the same time.
Oh, look at you. He flexed up. You beat him at the same day he taught you?
Yeah, he just taught me how to move the pieces and I beat him. Oh,
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting.
So we international, right? So I'm going to confess right now. I let this dude beat me.
Internationally ranked?
No, I'm saying we're on an international show, right? So the whole world is watching. Okay. Yeah, I let this dude beat
you
me.
You let him beat you? Why'd you do that?
Lies.
Because, you know, just get his confidence up. Get his confidence up.
Oh.
But this is how I do it. There's some fights where I want him to play chess so he can use his mind, right?
Mm.
So, okay, all right. The whole camp is using his mind. So I'm like, okay, all right. So he come out there and he have a great performance. So I'm like, okay, all right. So that's another strategy, try to get him to do better, right? But there's some mornings. I'm going to tell you about this last morning we had.
You don't let me beat him. I just beat him. Anytime I really want to win, I win. Hands down.
Listen, come downstairs, right? So he comes downstairs in his boxers and shit. With this old Terrence Crawford looking at everybody like, hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's play. All right. I'm kicking his ass, right? He getting mad. He getting mad. You can see it in his face, right? So he started making these different moves. No, man, you can't do that. No, man. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. No, you can't do that, bud. You know you can't do that. After a while, you just got to kind of fear for your life a little bit.
Nah, man.
I like being competitive with this dude in chess, man. It's funny. It's funny when he's losing, dude.
Hey, he beat me. He beat me that day. It didn't want to play me again. I was so
hot. I can see it in your face right now. Recounting it. You can see you reliving it.
Because he just caught me off guard. It's just like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm coming downstairs to eat some breakfast, and he's talking about, let's play. He got it ready and everything. So we're going.
I'm making
stupid. I'm like, damn, man, I didn't see that. Like, fuck. So he went. He wouldn't play me. But the next times he played me, I whitewashed him. Killed him so bad to where he don't even want to play me no more.
It's funny.
That's one thing that champions have. All champions. They hate losing any game. And like Jordan, they said if you beat him playing pool, he would fucking hate you. Because he didn't want to talk to you. Until he could beat you again. Until he got you again.
See, my thing is, we have a lot of people that want to play the game, right? So I don't play the game like I used to. I used to play and I used to beat them all. But once my nephew got good, I stopped playing. I'm like, man, you're a game head. Like, I ain't got time to just sit on the game. And,
right.
You know.
Like video games, like Xbox?
Yeah. 2K and
you can't fuck NFL. With those kids. Those kids that don't have responsibilities, they don't have children, they have nothing but time. Yeah. They get too good at those goddamn things.
Too good.
So and you would lose your life trying to chase them.
So now it gets to the point where I just watch them play. So we had this dude named Chance in the house. Oh, man. So Chance, we got Shakur, and we got Chucky. They all like to play, and we got Kenny. So Kenny was playing Chucky. Chucky and Chance was always going at it with each other. And Kenny was beating Chucky, and he was just rubbing it in his face. And it was just like, you could see how mad he was. Like, and this dude, Chucky, he's the one that always be like joking around and stuff. It's all fun and games. And like, you could just see. He was like, why is you even talking if you're not playing?
Hey, it gets so bad in the house, man, too. You got to put the game up.
Do you guys have, like, moments where you don't want them to play games and things like that, like during camp? Like, you just want them just to rest?
No, because that's relaxation.
Is it relaxing?
Yeah.
But video games are a little, they get you tense.
That's why he took the game. Like, man, you got to take the game, man. It gets so tense. People want to fight each other. Oh, people get in arguments.
Hey, one dude to get mad. Other dude like, you mad. You're like, man, shut up, man. That's why we sparring when we get to the gym, huh? How about that?
Oh, that's hilarious.
Be funny as shit, man.
It can cause problems, too.
Oh, sure. Well, a bunch of competitive dudes all training together, and then you play something competitive that makes you angry if you lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Recipe for disaster.
Right.
Hey, they don't care. They don't care in the house, man. They just like, whatever. I still want to play.
It's like a big daycare.
That's basically what it is. I'm the oldest. Got to start cussing at them. You can't eat. Don't you come out your room. Get up here and do these dishes.
Oh, man.
It seems like you guys are having a good time.
Oh, man, it's fun.
That's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. Camp is fun. That's hard work, and it's hard, but at the same time, you know, work is work, and then we try to come home and, you know, clear our head and not just be so mentally drained over thinking about the fight.
Right.
We want it to be fun at the end of the day.
Do you have, like, a mental coach, or is there anybody you've ever worked with that's, like where you've tried to do visualization work or formulate a game plan, or is it just go out there and get it done?
Just get it done.
No need.
No need. Like, my mental is so strong, like, from what I've overcome and been through in my whole entire life. It's like nothing's going to break me. That's my mental. Like, if that couldn't break me, you not going to break me.
You mean in terms of, like, your childhood and growing up? Yeah.
Like, everything that I went through.
Irreplaceable.
Right.
People that have gone through, like Mike Tyson, like many great fighters, have gone through hardship when they're younger.
Right.
That ability to endure.
It's not. I wouldn't say when I was younger. It's still going through.
Yeah,
I still go through a lot. A lot.
How so?
Like, seemed like before all my big fights, somebody died in my family. You know, like my grandpa just died the day before yesterday.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. But I'm here, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm about to go in training camp and prepare for my next fight. You know, so it's just like things always happening.
Right.
But at the same time, I got a job to do. And I'm going to still be focused and nothing's going to distract me.
Now, will you go into training camp with a date in mind? Or will you just – but do they – but you haven't – nothing's been signed yet, right?
Nothing's been signed yet.
So – do you just sort of go in and get the wheels moving and then just get ready to ramp up? Like, how do you determine when you ramp up your training camp? If you're, like I say, if you're getting back into training camp now, but you don't know when the fight's going to be scheduled, so how do you approach it in the beginning?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say I'm getting in training camp right now because I'm not. Like, my training camp is 6 to 7 weeks.
So you get ready to get into training camp?
No, I wouldn't even say that. I'm just saying in general.
Okay.
You know,
but you're not getting ready right now.
I stay working out.
Of course.
You know.
Now, when you're in the gym, but you're not training for a fight, are you still doing all the strength conditioning stuff and everything as well?
Yeah, here and there. Not to the same intensity, but just to keep moving.
Right. And so you do that just to make sure that you preserve your body and don't get injured and things along those lines. So when you think of it in terms of camp, like that is the roughest experience you're going through, right? You're going through how many – 9 weeks? Is that what you say you prefer?
Seven. 7 weeks.
7 weeks.
Fair.
So that those 7 weeks are when you're pushing it to the limit, and then everything else is more like a maintaining thing?
We like stair-steppers. Mm-hmm. We got a pre-camp, and then once we're in camp, it's like this. Don't.
And you know where those steps are.
Right. So when we get to the end of camp, we already at the highest step, so that way when we go to the fight, we already at the.
And so this is planned out in the amount of rounds you do, the amount of running you
every
do.
Every week is something added on. Every week, if it's 4 rounds, 6 rounds, 8 rounds, 10, 12, you know, minutes, we do minutes. You know.
Now, what's amazing about this conversation is if you were a young up and coming boxer in 1982 or something like that, and you want to know how Marvin Hagler did it, there's no podcast.
Right.
There's no like Marvin Hagler breaking down how he does his training camp and talking all about it. But today, kids can watch you and they can see what you're doing. And I guarantee just listening to you talk about realizing how hard Floyd worked and you working out, you wanted to work out even harder and all the crazy shit you're doing. Like people right now lacing up their shoes right now, getting fired up, running out the door thinking, I got to work like Terrence. I have to, you know. That is one of the coolest things it has to be about being a world champion is that you are the guy now. You know, when you were a kid, I'm sure you had like those Ring magazine posters and shit. Like, you're that guy now.
Right.
That's got to be crazy. Some kid right now who's like 6 years old, who's just getting into Golden Gloves, and he's looking up at his bedroom silver gloves. What is Golden Gloves?
Golden Gloves.
18?
When you're a senior. Okay. Silver Gloves is when you're a junior.
Silver Gloves. Doesn't sound as good.
Yeah.
Boxing, amateur boxing. Kids getting into amateur boxing. Right. They have heroes. You're one of them, man. I mean, that's got to be a cool feeling.
Oh, yeah, man. I love it. I love it. When I go to them little smokers or them little national tournaments and see all the little kids run up to me, Terrence Crawford, like, what up? I go grab them.
Wow, that's awesome.
Grab them by their head, mess around with them. And even at their wrestling tournaments, people be like, yo, you Terrence Crawford? I'd be like, yeah, what's up? What's your name? And they'd be like, dude, like, man, you real cool. Like, I'd be like, yeah, man, what's up?
That's amazing.
Yeah, so they all gravitate to me.
Was there someone that you met when you first met him where you're like, I can't even believe that I'm sitting there with Evander Holyfield or someone like that? Someone real famous where you couldn't believe you were actually being around them?
I would have to say Roy Jones.
Roy Jones.
Because I never was like a big fanboy. I would always be like, oh, man, they just humans like me. But when I seen Roy for the first time, I was like, Bo, that's Roy Jones Jr. Like, I met Floyd Mayweather but this Roy Jones Jr., like,
yeah,
it was just crazy. And he was real cool, and, you know, I was just like, damn. I didn't want to be, like, all, like, shy and stuff. I was like, damn. Like, I met Sugar Ray Leonard when I was an amateur, and it didn't feel the same. It was just like, man, that's Sugar Ray Leonard.
What's because it's a different era, because yeah. You didn't watch him fight. Watching Roy Jones, man, when I was a kid, when he was in his prime, he would lead with a left hook. It was like more than a jab. He would just whip that left hook at dudes, and they didn't know what the fuck to do with that. That speed was preposterous.
So fast.
Woo! Roy was doing stuff to people that made you just go, wow. Like, he's not even doing the same thing they're doing.
Right.
He's like, he's on another dimension. He's a different record speed, you mm-hmm. know? He was so fast. Like, Max Kellerman had this incredible rant once about just realizing how good Roy Jones was in his prime. It wasn't like he wasn't around great fighters, but they couldn't do shit to him.
Nah.
He was around world champions, but he was lighting them on fire.
Right.
It was crazy. And, you know, all good things come to an end. It only lasted for, you know, X amount of years. I mean, what was the best years of his championship reign? But he was untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
Untouchable. Untouchable. When he knocked out Virgil Hill with that body shot, wow. You know, you're like, God damn.
One punch.
When he put his hands behind his back and still knocked down James Toney. I mean, when he dropped his hands like this, and James Toney does it too, and he leaps in and drops him.
With the left hook.
And that one dude he knocked out with his hands behind his back. Who was that dude?
Oh, I forgot.
When he was on the ropes.
Yeah. Put his hands behind his back. The dude moves forward and drops him and knocks him out. It's like, this is a movie scene.
Right.
This isn't real life. No one does that in real life. Roy Jones was having fun with people.
Yeah, he was.
He's having fun with
people.
He
was entertaining.
He was incredible how fast he was.
But, like, I didn't met people like Roy. He's a fan of me.
It's amazing. Know?
And it's like, dude, like, I'd be, like, so starstruck. It's like, man, I'm a fan of you.
And he's a fan of you.
You a fan of me.
Wow.
Like, today. Today,
must make you so happy.
I was on Instagram, and I was like, I went past LL Cool J because we was listening to some old school music, and I was like, dang, LL got a Instagram. So I clicked on him, and he's following me. I said, bro, look, LL Cool J following me on Instagram. So it's just crazy just to think of all the people that you like grew up admiring and like you a fan of, and for you to see them fan of you, it's like, damn. Like Iverson. I met Iverson.
Wow.
And he came up to me, and he was more happy to see me than I was to him. Terrence Crawford, oh, man, you the motherfucker, man.
Wow.
And I was like, I was just sitting there looking at him like, this Allen Iverson, dude. Like, damn. So it's crazy, like, seeing all those, you know, celebrities and all-time greats that's big fans of mine, and it's like, fuck.
Does it wear off, or do you still freak out?
I still freak out sometimes. I still freak out sometimes. Like, it just depends on the person. Like, fuck. Like, damn.
Right. You like know? Snoop or someone like that.
Like, Snoop, too.
I know.
I met Snoop, I'll be like, damn. Like, fuck. Like, that's when you know that you made it to a certain level in your professional sports that everybody watching you.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's one more thing that's beautiful about you meeting those little kids is that they can realize, like, oh, Terrence Crawford's a man.
Right.
He's a man. I mean, he's a superstar and he's a champion, and I see him on TV, but he's a man. He's right here. He got me in a headlock.
Right.
Oh, shit, we're playing together. He's a nice guy. Oh, he's a person.
Yeah.
Because you see someone that's achieved a certain level of status and championship reign, and you know, see him on TV knocking people out. That doesn't even seem like a real person when you're a kid. Like, that can't be a real person.
Right.
And then you're there. And then you're shaking his hand. He's like, what the fuck? Man. This is crazy. So you changed that kid's world.
Yeah.
Like, his idea of what the future is, idea of what a person is. A person is Terrence Crawford's a person.
Right.
I'm a person, too. Like, I just got to work hard.
And it's crazy because, like, a lot of people, they'll see me and they'd be like, where are your bodyguards at? Where your entourage? Like, they be having questions to ask.
Yeah.
And I just be like, nah, man, I'm a regular person. They be like, man, why you don't be on TV like Floyd Mayweather? Be like, man, that ain't for me, man. I'm chill. They be like, oh, well, where are your cars? Like, they be just asking me all kinds of crazy stuff. And I just be like, nah, man, that's cool.
Do you still live where you grew up?
Right.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. And everybody's cool?
Everybody.
Nobody gets jealous of the fact that your parents crossing now?
You always going to have that.
Right.
No matter where you go. You always going to have the jealousy and the people that envy you.
People want loans.
Yeah. That too.
That too.
Guaranteed. Yeah, right?
You just gotta move different.
You know?
You just got to move different.
What kind of cars you ride?
I drive old schools.
Old schools? Yeah. Like what kind?
I got some Monte Carlo SS.
Oh, that's right. I saw you and looked like a Grand National.
Yeah.
Do you have a Grand National?
No, it's a Monte Carlo.
That's a Monte Carlo. Yeah. Oh, is it a souped up Monte Carlo?
No, it's all original. I just put the rims on it.
Oh.
The souped up one is the silver one, the 87.
What is that, another Monte Carlo?
Yeah.
Oh, you're a Monte Carlo guy.
Yeah.
I love Monte Carlos back in the day. Like the 70s, like 70 Monte Carlos. Ooh, those are so pretty.
Ain't nothing like the 80s.
You like the 80s?
87.
That's probably because you're younger than me.
Super sport.
Me, I'm like, I get from muscle cars, I get as high as 71 with a Barracuda and then I drop off.
Yeah.
Everything else, like, I need 65 to 70. 71 is only Barracuda and Challenger. That's it. Everything else fell apart by 71.
What about the Oldsmobile?
They made some cool shit. Yeah, they made some cool shit, but it's just not as good as like the 60s. 60s and the 1970 cars, like 70 Chevelles.
Yeah, I was about to say the Chevelle.
Come on, 70 drop Chevelle.
Top. Oh, yeah.
The problem with the drop top is they're wiggly. You know, they're like there's a lot of body flex to it where you don't get the rigidity that you feel in like the solid hard top muscle car.
Right.
You know, but I love those old cars, man. Yeah. They have something to them.
Right. And they cost a shit ton of money.
They do.
Especially
now.
if you get one that's all original. Everything, the paint still, like, man, you bought this car to put it in the garage for 30 years.
Dude,
like,
I saw a Barracuda that was for sale for over $1 million.
Damn.
$1 million for a car that was like 30,000. Not even, right? Didn't we talk about this? Yeah. Wasn't it like $5,000 when it was brand new? Something crazy like that.
Yeah.
Now it's $1 million.
I got a Jay Leno.
I don't know. One of those knuckleheads that likes everything perfect and original. There's certain dudes like with original numbers matching. Look at the VIN number matches the tires. These are the original tires from 1960.
Got like, all bitch, the paperwork.
You better go slow around a corner with those shitty tires. Everything original means everything shitty.
Yeah.
You know, shitty drum brakes and shitty suspension and.
I used to always get up and watch them car auctions.
Oh yeah, the Meachums, that kind of shit. Yeah, I love those.
Just to look at the cars. God,
if you have a ton of money and you're there, that shit could be real bad.
Yeah,
like if you're one of those dudes that's like a collector and you see all those cars moving by, you're like, I want that one too. Yeah. A 55 Chevy.
Right.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, there's some. I mean, I'm just a big fan of those shapes. Mm-hmm. Those shapes of the 1960 shapes. There's something about the car. They just nailed it. They just knew how to make a car look beautiful back then.
And it was built sturdy.
Yeah.
Like nowadays, you bump a car, you big old dent, your bumper falling off. Back then, you can run a car over and
steel, all steel.
Get a little bitty dent and go on about your way.
Yeah, it's a different. But also, cars handle good. They have airbags.
Yeah.
There's some good shit about today's cars too.
Right.
Drive itself.
Yeah. You ever driven one of those? You ever been in a Tesla?
We just talked about that.
I have one on the way over here. They're freakouts, man. They'll freak you out. Like you driving that thing, nah, like, oh my God. Have you?
They fast as shit.
It's ridiculous, right? Did you ever drive one?
Yeah.
Dude.
The crazy thing about the Teslas is it's like a race car. It's like, and you'd be waiting for it to be like, dun, 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 dun. Like,
right.
But it don't never change gears. It's just straight.
and all of a sudden, it's 150 shit. Miles an hour like
damn.
That. It's so fast, like it doesn't even make sense.
It's like a race car.
It's like a time machine. It's like it compresses time. Like there's a certain amount of time in a normal car you feel like you have to go. There's a certain amount of time that has to take place before I can get in front of that guy and then get over here and then get to the on-ramp. With a Tesla, you just go, shoom, you're there. It's like time compresses.
Yeah.
0 to 60 in 2.4 seconds.
Damn.
You never even felt anything like it. It's a goddamn roller coaster ride. It's like you're pinned to your seat. It's just going.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck. And they're making a faster one. They got one that's going to be 1.9. The Roadster, that really slick looking little tiny one. They're ridiculous. That's the future.
Yeah, I got a Demon.
Dodge Demon?
Yeah.
Oh, those are nice.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's a fun fucking. What was that, like 800 horsepower?
I think 909. 800
something close, crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
After anything over seven, it's
they
like,
made me sign my rights away.
Really?
You got to sign all these papers talking about if you die or get seriously injured and can't nobody else come back and sue them. All wow. kinds of crazy shit.
Wow.
Because the car is so fast, they letting you know, like, you know, you can get real life fucked up.
Do they make those in a stick shift or is it just an automatic?
I don't know. I got an automatic.
It's a crazy amount of power.
But I think nowadays you got the
paddle
the
handle, shifters.
Yeah, yeah, paddle shifters.
That's cute.
Where you can put manual.
But
in
the thing, shifting with your left foot in the clutch and shifting gears with your right, that's like part of the whole muscle car thing. Yeah. Right?
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
part of the old school thing. You don't yeah. want an old school automatic. Ugh. Yeah. It seems silly, you know?
But you just think, a new school.
Yeah. That's true.
It's way faster.
Yeah. Oh, it's way faster. Cars yeah. today are way faster, period. And they're all going to be electric within 10 years. They're just so much better. They're so much faster.
Right.
If as long as they can figure out how to make it charge quick, that's the thing that gas yeah. has. You can just pull into the gas station, 10 minutes later, you got a full tank.
Right.
So your car it charges up on
yeah.
the battery? How
yeah.
long does it take?
It'll take a good solid 6 or 7 hours if it's dead. If it's almost dead, it'll take like 6 or 7 hours at a super. I have a supercharger too. Normally, it might take 12, like with a regular outlet. You know,
fuck.
It takes a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you pull into like one of those superchargers, I think they can get you up to like 80% in like an hour. To the first charge, the first 80% quit pretty quick. So you could do that.
So it's like paying for gas.
Yeah. Yeah. You pay for it. Yeah. Use a credit card.
They got it at Walmart.
Pay for it. Yeah.
I've seen them there, but
the airport's free. You can plug in at the airport and it's free. It's a weird experience, man, because I love the sound of engines, but that car makes them all look stupid.
Yeah.
They all seem dumb. It does, right?
Yeah, you don't hear that. But it's yeah. something. To, yeah, I gotta have that muscle.
It's fun. Yeah, yeah. And once you get into that,
you can't burn out in it.
Nah, there's no burning out. It just goes.
Yeah.
And it makes a noise like this. Whoosh. Like, it doesn't make any noise. It doesn't, like, there's none of that. Just yeah. whoosh, it just takes off. Yeah, it doesn't even seem real.
I like them. The inside is crazy with the big screen, touch screen. And
yeah, no, they're pretty dope.
You just look like you're in the futuristic.
It feels vehicle. Like you're in the futuristic.
Yeah.
What do you spend your money on? Do you have a thing that you indulge in?
No, that's – I don't really have no spending habits, just –
That's
fishing
amazing.
Stuff.
Fishing?
And
yeah, we were talking before the show about bow fishing. You like bow fishing?
I love it. I got took on bow fishing one time, and I've been hooked. I've been spending money on it. We actually walked in this pond. I bought waders. I got waders and everything. So I'm out there in the water, in the little mud and stuff, pop, hitting the little guards and the anything I can find.
Do you eat gars? You smoke those,
nah,
right?
No, we don't.
You can't eat them? No.
We mainly trying to get the grass carp because they're
invasive,
yeah,
right? Yeah. They try to kill as many of those as they can, right?
Yeah. So it's crazy, though, because the Asian carp, we on my boat, we in the river, and this was the other night. We going through this little spot in the river, and they start jumping in the boat.
Yeah, isn't that weird? Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I seen it on one of these TV shows.
Fucking crazy.
They like this big, no
yeah.
lie. They was like.
You said called jumping carp?
No, like, Asian carp.
They're like
Asian
six, carp. 7 pounds. And they yeah. fly through the air and hit you in the face.
Asian carp is different than grass carp. We was shooting grass carp in the pond. But in the river, the Asian carp that was jumping in my boat was every bit of 30 pounds. Phew, phew,
phew. And they're hitting people in the head, yeah. KOing them. Flatlining them.
So didn't they bring those carps over to eat up something and something?
Like, look at these things.
Look at
these people fly up. Boom! That shit got hit in the back of the head.
Hey, that's boom. How they jump, bro.
Look at these guys are trying to shoot them while they're flying. That is so ridiculous. What a redneck sport.
He just got hit.
What a redneck sport.
Popped her upside her head.
Look at this. What kind of fucking fish just throws itself at a boat? It's so crazy.
Isn't it the sound of the engine that
yeah.
get them started?
Yeah. Something like that. It's crazy. Like, this will give you a target panic, man. You're not going to get good at shooting a bow and arrow if you're getting hit in the head while you're pulling back your bow. Look at these guys are just trying to shoot. No one's even pulling the trigger.
Oh, man. Now, that's funny. Look at that. Pop.
Yeah, look. Pop. He just keeps getting hit. Donk. What a weird fish. That dude just got clipped.
Why was he laughing though? It got smacked.
And he ducked the second one. Look at him. Oh, that guy got nailed. Yeah, I'd have a bat.
I'd
be fishing with a baseball bat.
That's how they
bat.
Be, bro. I'm telling you.
Or a samurai sword.
Hey, them mugs get big, too.
What part? Where was you at?
In the river. River.
So they're trying Missouri? To kill as many of those as they can. They're trying to kill as many of those as they can. Those things have overpopulated lakes, just taken over. I don't know why they brought them in, though, originally.
More so of the lakes is grass carp.
Not
Asian carp.
Yeah.
You know, and some rivers.
That's
some
those
rivers.
Big red-looking ones, big right? Ones. Those get huge.
Man, like,
yeah.
You have...
Do you know what's crazy?
Can you eat buffalo.
In America, we think
not
of them
Asian
as,
carp,
as shit. Those are like trash fish. But in England, they're prized. Like in England, they have carp fishing contests.
Yeah.
And they have certain carps that they catch and they weigh in and then they release them and then they catch them again like a year later. Like they know the carp and like they were in world records. Like, they, oh, he caught Mr. Fishy again. Right. Mr. Fishy is now, you know, 85 fucking pounds. And they keep catching them year after year until these things die.
Right.
And when they die, they make like a big deal. We lost this carp. Like they take carp fishing super serious, which is so strange. Because over here in America, we think of them as trash.
But they eat everything.
Yeah.
When we see the Asians fishing and whatever they catch, they keep.
Yeah.
So it's like the gar, the Asian carp, they eat them mugs.
Apparently, gar tastes good if you smoke it. That's what I've heard. I've heard you can smoke gar. Not fucking with it?
Nah.
It's a dinosaur.
Yeah.
It feels it's a weird thing to eat. It's like eating a snapping turtle or something.
I didn't shot one just to look at the meat, and it's all hard. How, like all them bones. How you gonna clean that thing?
Yeah, I saw a guy do it on TV. Guy cooked it on TV. I forget what was one of those wild game cooking shows. He smoked a gar.
I could see an alligator gar, like when you go down like to Texas or something.
Oh, is it a different kind of gar?
Yeah, like an alligator gar, and them mugs get big.
Maybe that's what it is.
You know, but. The gar that we got, little skinny little pencil little things. Like,
oh, so they're tiny.
Yeah, they like that big. They long, but they...
Yeah, those Texas ones are freakish, man.
Yeah.
They don't even look real.
Yeah.
But listen, man, I'm not going to take up any more of your time. I just want to tell you I'm a big fan. It was an honor having you in here.
Appreciate it.
I really appreciate watching you fight. You're one of my favorite. I think when I talk to people about combat sports, one of the things that I always talk about is like the difference between the skill level of an elite boxer when you see where that's all they do versus like in MMA. You see openings in MMA that you would never see like in boxing. So I'm just I'm happy you're out there, man. I appreciate it. And let us know when your fight is. We'll let everybody know and just alert the world. I'm excited.
Of course.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Can we get a picture?
Yeah.